Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kawula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Wake up. Hollywood.
Start with the little rooster Hollywood. At the beginning.
Hollywood.
Hey, how are you, Eddie?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Am I too loud in your ear?
No, I'm actually turning it back up. The guys that were in here the show before us just had it cranked all the way up. Because
they were blinded by the
They were on some substances,
jar.
I believe. There was. We walked in here, it smelled like a pharmacy.
It definitely
and
smelled.
And not a Rite Aid one.
The one with the green
yes.
cross. How was your week?
Good.
What did you do? Did you do anything crazy?
No.
Nothing crazy?
No. It was Memorial Day weekend, I didn't do anything. It's too crowded to go anywhere, so I don't do anything.
I see, I left. I went to Yosemite.
I got out. How long were you in Yosemite?
I was only there for 2 days, and crazy thing, I didn't know that Yosemite is like one of the most crowded days. I mean, crowded weekends. The most crowded weekend is Memorial Day weekend, but we were there Friday.
Most national parks are nuts on Memorial Day.
But you know what? To go on Friday was money because there was nobody there. No traffic. It was awesome. We left at like midnight, I think. We got there at like 3 in the morning. Or we left at like 11. And we had no traffic. Nothing was crazy, like open. And it was just awesome.
Were the waterfalls going?
The waterfalls were going
nice.
because of all the rain,
yeah,
you know?
I bet.
You know, it's weird. With Yosemite, it's like one of two things. Like, I went with my family years ago during the summer. And it's like, you see Half Dome, and it's beautiful, and it's sunny, but there's no waterfalls.
Yeah.
And then when you go...
You gotta go in the spring.
If you go in the spring, there's tons of waterfalls, but then you have the fog, so you couldn't see Half Dome at all. We went all the way up to the top, and it was
But
just,
yeah, the best time to go is like when the snow melts in the spring. Did you go up to the Redwoods? Sequoia?
I didn't go up to the Sequoias. We didn't have time. That's like 8 hours away.
No, there's a part of Yosemite where there's redwoods.
Yeah, the Mariposa.
Yeah.
The Mariposa Grove. The problem is we had my dog Otis with us, and they closed off of the roads, and they wouldn't let Otis get on the shuttle.
It's time to say goodbye to Otis.
Dude, I should have put him down right
there.
Yeah,
if there's ever a time to put a dog down.
But, you know, at that point, we had seen so much stuff. We were like, all right, let's go. Let's
die. Yeah, but to get a picture of little tiny Otis trying to pee on a giant redwood tree?
I didn't, but I got a picture of Otis like in front of a bunch of waterfalls.
Yeah.
You know what? That dog in 5 months has seen some cool shit. He went to Big Sur, Carmel, Monterey, and like he's just.
But
like,
they don't remember anything in the first 2 years.
Well, you don't know.
So he's
you don't
never
know. It's like testing.
Be able to remember
you know what was weird though? Like he's a really good travel dog. Like he's really good.
You got to train him early.
Yeah, but the crazy thing is, like when he got home, it's crazy to see. Like humans, we're like, oh, thank God we're home. But he was like, oh my God, thank God we're home. That's so. It's such a relief. And I was like, it was cool to see that in a dog. I went to a comedy club last weekend too.
Where?
I went to the Improv.
Oh.
I saw Dane Cook. Chris D'Elia. You know, so many people have been talking about Chris D'Elia. I think even you have been talking about him.
Well, he's on TV all the time.
Well, have you seen his stand-up?
Yeah.
Stand-up's pretty good.
Yeah.
I was actually pretty impressed. So I saw him. I saw Eliza Schlesinger.
Yeah.
And two other people that I can't remember their names. But it was a pretty good show.
Yeah.
Dane Cook wasn't really, like, on his, like, funny guy bit because he was
probably
so
working
bummed.
New stuff out or something.
Well, he was bummed about Letterman. So he was just talking about that and how Letterman gave him his first break. And, you know, the girl that gave him his first break happened to be eating, like, in the restaurant. So, like, they had this huge reunion, like, in the middle of the show. It was kind of cool. Yeah, it was really cool.
That's pretty
so
neat.
How did you – I wanted to ask you, because you're a comic. How did you feel about Letterman leaving, retiring?
I was a huge fan of Letterman growing up as a kid. I was like the – you know, I'd sneak up late at night to watch late night. But it's just weird. It's like, I mean, his was the last show where I think it meant a lot to do stand-up on, almost sort of like the way it felt with Carson. But it's gotten so different now. Like the last 15, 20 years, it still doesn't – it doesn't mean what it meant.
But you know what? It is the end of an era.
But he is like the last
I feel one. Like he's the last one of that era. Like,
yeah.
You know, now – I think Jimmy Kimmel's doing some cool stuff. And I think it was really awesome that he – actually didn't air his show out of respect for Letterman.
Well, Conan actually told people to turn the channel.
Really?
On his monologue. He's like, all right, you guys need to turn a channel now and watch Letterman's
live. Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So, I mean, Conan's like, I mean, Conan's now like 22 years into it. Like, he's like the, he's like actually carrying the torch that Letterman passed that he got from Carson. So, I mean, if there's anyone carrying on the lineage, it would be
Conan.
Conan. You know, but, you know. It's not what, because it's not like it used to be when there was three stations and there was two late night shows.
Right,
it's just not.
And Ed Sullivan was the show to watch.
Yeah, it's
that
just
was it.
Not.
It's not the same.
It's not
thing.
What it was. So.
But Letterman also had that old school vibe. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that Johnny, and I heard up until Johnny Carson's death, he was writing jokes for Letterman.
Yeah, Carson submitted jokes for him.
Which is, I think those. Is awesome and very old school. And you would think he would do it for Leno, but Leno was. I think Leno and Carson, you know how they had some like beef or something like that.
Yeah, right? they. I think they like Carson wanted Letterman to have the Tonight Show, but NBC wanted Leno to have the Tonight Show. So,
oh.
Of course, NBC rules.
They so rule the world.
They rule the world.
No, but did you watch his last show?
Yeah.
What did you think of it?
That's good. I mean,
his last top 10, I thought was pretty much.
Yeah, to have all those people come out.
Have all those people come out, and you know what? I was like, who's he going to have for number one? For him to have Bill Murray, I was like,
Bill Murray's his first guest.
Really?
Ever.
I didn't know that.
On Late Night with David Letterman, he was the first guest.
I didn't know that. That's awesome.
That's why he was also his last guest. The night before, Bill Murray was the last guest.
And they were doing all kinds of shots and stuff like that, which is crazy because he doesn't drink, right?
Bill Murray?
No.
Letterman doesn't drink, no.
Letterman doesn't drink, but he drank on the show.
I don't know. I don't know if it was real. I mean, Bill Murray showed up on MSNBC after that, hammered.
Yeah, and he fell on the...
Yeah.
Is that that was the show where he fell on the chair, right?
Yeah,
he fell
Lawrence O'Donnell show or whatever. He just...
I want Bill Murray. We got to get Bill Murray in here. Somehow.
Yeah, that's gonna.
Dude, we'll leave a message. We should do a call. You have his number, right? You don't you have to call some number?
He's got a number, an answering machine service, but he's not.
We should call it one time on the show.
Yeah, we'll do that.
Nah, leave you don't want to do it. I'll do it.
You do it. You can do it.
Anything fun planned for the weekend? This coming up?
No.
Nothing. Any shows? Nothing.
I got nothing coming up.
Nothing.
I got nothing.
So, do you know any of the comics that I mentioned? I mean, you don't have to badmouth them if you do.
No, I know I know everybody.
I've never heard of Eliza Schlesinger. How was
she won Last Comic Standing, like in 2008. Okay. I also did the April Foolishness thing with her this year. She was on that show.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Phew.
She was good. Her bits were good.
I know
good.
Eliza.
Chris D'Elia, because of all the Whitney stuff, and like I was like kind of a little bit hesitant about how good he was going to be.
Yeah.
But he was actually superb. He was actually one of the better. He was, for me, he was one of the best comics that night. So I was like, man, Eddie's got to link with that circle.
Nah, I'm not in that circle.
We'll get you in that circle.
I'm good.
We'll get you in
I'm
that
good.
Circle. Soon, maybe.
I know them. I'm good.
You're like, that's it. Hey, that's it. So did you see, was there anything significant for the Letterman show that, was it poignant for you at any point? Or was it just like,
no,
it's time for you to get off the air?
No, I haven't watched late night TV since I was probably in college. Maybe even, I mean,
I tape them for the musical guests, or if there's if there's a comic that I'm really excited
about. I really
about.
Don't watch it anymore. I mean, I'll watch it if there's a comic on, I know, but I don't, as far as just watching every night, it's just not something I
You know
what
was a real tease? The Letterman Show called me about 8 months ago, and they were like, hey, we want you to submit, you know, as a musical guest. I'm like, great, that's awesome. And then I submitted to them, and they, as I'm like putting the package together and getting the dress, they're like, hey, just so you know, we just got word that he wants to do for the last month and a half or 2 months, he wants to just bring back all his old favorite guests. He's like, so we may not be able to fit you in, but he's like, we're going to try. They're like, we're going to try. I'm like, cool. And I'm like, that's such a tease.
Yeah,
it's like you finally get the call that it was just like, well, maybe.
It was like that with comedians too. Like, he started recycling all of his favorite comedians. Over
well,
there,
I so understand. And yeah. And you know what? Like, I was not pissed at all because I was like, dude, you're Letterman. You can do whatever you want.
He can do whatever he wants to at this point.
It's your show.
Yeah.
We'll let you do whatever you want.
Letterman.
What do you think? I think he's going to be bored.
He's 68.
Yeah, but still, man, when you do something
he's got a kid and he's 68, and that's a grind doing a live talk show. Or not, it wasn't live, but it was.
Well, you think
shot
he's working
day.
That much? Dane Cook said some funny stuff. He said there were a whole bunch of assistants that were like, okay, you can't, don't look at Dave unless Dave looks at you. Don't touch his back. Don't do all these things. And he was just like when you met him, you know, on camera, he was doing all the things that he wasn't supposed to. He was like looking at him.
Yeah.
Shit, I'm not supposed to be looking at him. So it was funny to hear all those little things that, you know, nobody really gets to know unless you're on a show that. You know what I mean? On that level.
Yeah, I would love to have done it, but, you know, didn't happen.
Well, you've done the Late Late Show with Craig Ferguson.
Not the same. Not the same.
Well, we'll get you
still
on Conan.
Still great thing.
I'm sure you'll do Conan
Very
at
proud
some
of
point.
It, so.
You know what? One day you and I are both going to do Conan together.
That'd be fun.
That'd be the shit. And we can do our show from the dressing room.
There we go.
Maybe.
Live show from the dressing room.
We'll see. We'll see. I think our special guest has arrived, Mr. Peter Chung. How are you? Good, everybody Wang Chung tonight. Or everybody Peter Chung tonight.
I've never heard
Have
that.
You been waiting to do that since the show starts? Since you booked him, have you been waiting to say that?
I was like, please, please, please. Yes. I couldn't wait. I couldn't wait. How are you, Peter Chung?
I'm gold. Yourself?
He's gold. You hear that?
Gold.
So I met Peter, actually. We were both playing on Park City TV at Sundance. And I think you were just going on. You were about to go on. And I think I had just finished.
Yeah, you just finished, yeah.
And we were just like quickly exchanged info. And he said, man, I'm moving back to LA soon. I'm like, man, I got a radio show. And I thought I'd never hear back from him ever again. And then, like, a month ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, yeah, he was like, hey, man, I just moved back to – I moved to L.A. Can I be on your show? I'm like, yeah, man, totally. And then I was like, send me your links, man. I'll see when I can fit you in. And then, like, I think you sent me an email, like, a week ago. And it's like, hey, man, any update? And I was like, in Yosemite, no reception, nothing. So it's just like –
yeah, there's nothing up there.
You can't get anything. No. I mean, you can't get a phone call. You can't send a text. Nothing. Yeah, so I'm sure he was just like – this guy's never going to call. Ever. He's like, maybe he didn't like my shit. But yeah, man, it was a long weekend, and we got you in. So you came all the way from San Francisco. Is that where you were born and raised? Tell us your story.
I was born and raised in Cupertino, and then I moved to San Francisco for like 3 years. Now I'm
Cupertino, that's the thing that always shows up on your Apple phone, right?
Yeah, that's where it's designed and everything.
Yeah, yeah, that's where, so whenever time
if you want some Apple Inside Scoops, you let me know.
He probably made
you
your
free
iPhone,
Apple
dude.
Watches you could throw out
there? No. Not for you, just for me.
Dope. So you were you playing up in San Francisco? Did you go to school there? How did you get into playing music?
I went to UC Santa Barbara, but I got into music. I've been playing music my entire life, and just recently, in 2012, one of my friends pushed me to do music full time, and with the help of all my friends, I was able to do it. And with a successful Kickstarter, I got my first CD ever.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
How long did it take for you to raise the money and all that stuff?
It took the full time necessary, the full 30 days.
Okay. All right. That's good. Was that all the time you were allowed to get?
I could have done more, but
how much did you raise on Kickstarter to get us to make it?
Like 7,200.
That's pretty good. Yeah. That's like what, almost 2,000 a day. More than 2,000.
2,000 a day. Over
I'm sorry.
30
I'm
days.
Sorry. I'm sorry. It's like what is that? $200 a day.
$200 a day.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I dropped. It's been a long weekend.
Yeah, really impressive that, CD. That, get $2,000 a day.
Too. I was like, but that doesn't add up.
Sorry.
I can't pull
my math
over.
Is bad, dude. I'm getting old, Eddie. Everything's just getting rusty.
Yeah. So if you look at my CD, my face is made out of everyone who contributed.
Oh, I was going to ask you what all these names meant.
Yeah, in my musical career. So.
Oh, that's cool.
That's really neat.
There's a picture of him made up of names.
Yeah.
Who got the nostrils?
I don't know who got the nostrils.
That's the shitty part.
Why? Yeah. Are they like blacked out?
What, you can barely see him, and plus they're in his nostrils.
Why don't you give him a little nod?
I can't. I can't even read.
And he's getting older. He
who's in the nostrils? Look, you can't. Tell me who's in the nostrils.
Let me see. I'll try and figure it out. I cannot.
Yeah.
I cannot make that out.
Those are the boogers, so you got
to... Well, we really appreciate everybody that gave Peter a chance.
Those are the low donors. Those are the $2 donors.
So did you start playing... Did you gig at Santa Barbara at all?
No, I didn't play much at all at Santa Barbara. As soon as I graduated, because I was like wifed up, I had a girlfriend, and that took all my time, that and basketball. And as soon as I left, I was like, well...
Do you play basketball for the school?
No.
Oh.
No.
Just recreational basketball took up all your time?
Those are some good games.
Just
man.
Balling on the blacktop took all your time?
Oh, man. Those are some of the highlights of my life.
Yeah,
right
dude.
There.
That's balling. He's balling it up right now.
My girl and my.
Ball is life.
Eddie was, I can't believe.
Eddie was almost impressed.
Balling up on the playground took up all your time.
Balling up and like, hitting up with the ladies.
Dude, he's like a college basketball player we got going. Oh, no. You just played basketball while you were in college.
Sorry, Peter. That's all right. Santa Barbara was actually the first city that I played outside of L.A., so I have a special bond with that city.
Oh, yeah? Where'd you play?
The first club I played... What the fuck was the first club we played
Soho?
In Santa
Soho
Barbara?
Soho Lounge?
I played Soho a bunch. Right. I played James Joyce. Is that
James
still
Joyce?
There?
Yeah.
There's another club. It was called... Absinthe. I can't believe I just remembered that. Man, dude, that was 11 years ago. Absinthe. And it's not there anymore.
Okay.
But that was the first club that we played. And there was another like little restaurant that we played, but we ended up playing Soho and the James Joyce the most.
You got this calm, like oh, I'm relaxed, nostalgic face.
Dude, no, because Santa Barbara, it was the first city. Like, we had started headlining, you know, House of Blues in L.A. a bunch, and we had a great big following. And Santa Barbara was the first city we were trying to see, okay, can we start from nothing, we don't know anybody, and still get that following? And we did, and we started packing and selling out venues up there, and it was just like, oh, okay, let's do this across the country, up the coast, like, you know, let's do whatever we can. And Santa Barbara is the first city, so I have like so much love for that city.
That's amazing.
I haven't gone back in a long time, though.
So like, much I've, love, I don't go there.
I've fans are like, dude, when are you coming back? I'm like, I don't know, we'll see.
I love it so much, I can't stand it.
I'll get up there soon, I promise. All right, so you left school, mm-hmm. and then what happened? What was the thing that was the trigger that made you go, okay, I need to do this?
Well, I was just doing some crappy sales job, and then my manager, who wanted to help support my dreams, he's like, you know what, I don't think you should work here anymore.
Wow.
I'm gonna help you out financially for a bit, and then we're gonna see what happens. And so he helped me out financially for a bit, and then
wow, so some guy just actually helped you with money.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty money. Pretty
crazy.
Yeah, so he let me stay at his house. And
were you doing any sexual favors?
He was balling.
I'm just kidding.
All in.
He was balling on the basketball court. So just play me one-on-one and we'll be good. No, I'm just kidding. So that's amazing. Where did you say you were working?
I was working in San Jose, just doing sales.
Okay.
Yeah, and then just the San Jose scene over there wasn't doing anything, so I decided.
You must have just been hating that. Just like, hi, how you doing? My name is Peter Chung. Can I sell you some shit?
But they have some great open mics, but you know, there wasn't really many gigs that I could do. There wasn't a lot of singer-songwriter places, so it was either San Francisco or L.A. And I was like, oh, let's go to San Francisco, see what happens.
And what did you think of that scene compared to, well, you just moved,
yeah.
So we'll get to that in a second, but how was the San Francisco scene to you, like, you can be honest. You don't have to.
Oh, it's fantastic. It still is fantastic. I miss it all the time. There's such a huge network of singer-songwriters, and it's totally my town. And, like, house concerts are so huge. I love that, where you don't have to go to a venue and you have to bring a certain amount of people. You just do hold it at someone's house.
Right.
And there's, like, everyone brings booze, and it's just a great time.
It's a party.
Yeah, it's a party.
Did you ever hear a band called Tea Leaf Green up there?
No. What do you ask?
Okay, because I grew up with them, and they've got this huge following up there. And just a shout out to them real quick. But yeah, they're from San Francisco.
Tea Leaf Green.
So at the these house party things, it's just like someone has a huge house and decides to a party and they hire a musician to play at the party. Is that what it is? And people just come?
To a certain extent. So there's a lot of people there who enjoy having an excuse to have a party.
Yeah.
So they just throw a concert and they invite their friends, and we're supposed to bring some people too. And there's a guy who runs a lot of them. His name is Casey Turner. Yeah, so if you just look, Casey Turner Presents, he has some huge people just doing
so, like, almost like party promoters. They get hired for these house parties.
Yeah, they're called living room shows, right?
Yeah.
And they basically charge the people that come through the door.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just basically, like, and what's great is it's like everybody listens. You know what I mean? Like, when you're at a club.
But is it just a house they rent out, or is it someone's house that wants to have
house.
A party?
It's someone's house.
Someone's house. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Which is like crazy.
That's
like,
interesting.
It's like, let's have a kegger as adults.
Let's have a concert in my huge rich house. Have all these strangers in here drinking.
That eating. Sounds perfect.
Sounds
Doesn't
awful.
It? Doesn't it though?
Let's have a living room show in your living room, Eddie. I'm ready. I'm so ready to
I'd
do that.
I'd kick everybody out at 9.
Well, does that work for stand-up comedy? Do you guys have living rooms?
It's weird. There's this thing that's been popping up lately in the stand-up comedy scene where now there's been a lot of backyard shows. Like, people start doing shows and like apartment complexes that have like common areas, like a backyard, or people have the garage comedy where they have like castle. They'll do stand-up shows in garages and backyards. It's sort of like this thing that's popped up. So,
but like, what do they do? They have just one person. I was at a bar.
No, it's like they book like 8 comics and then like they invite friends and there's like a crowd of like 20 or 30 people and you're just doing stand-up in someone's living room or. It's weird.
It would be cool if they were like, excuse me, there's a 2-drink minimum.
It's weird. It's a weird. They'll have a bar or whatever. It's a weird thing. It's something
that's cool, though.
Last couple of years.
You know what? I think that's just people getting sick of like paying $20 for parking, paying $20 for drinks, paying $15 or $20 to get into the door. And then you sit there and you're just like, this is okay.
Yeah, but I've always been like, I think the art form needs the presentation. I've always been someone who's like, I want to see a stage. I want to see lights. I want to see the dim. You know, I just like the whole presentation. Same like watching a film. Like I want to see. I want to be in a movie theater.
That's how I am.
It's like I want to see it presented a certain way.
You and I are very old school. Like that's not what's.
I just don't think you throw it up anywhere it goes. And okay, we got stand up show here. I just,
but that's how it originated. If you think about it, everybody used to do it in like tents, like way back in the day. You know what I mean? No. Moving circus tents, literally, like,
yeah, but
hey, just, here's a performance.
I don't know.
He just went to the original school.
That's right. Old school. I went to the old school. I went to the real old school. No, but I know what you mean. It's like you want to see the art form and whatever medium presented in its highest form.
Yeah.
And I agree. Because, like, for me, sound is everything. There's certain venues I'll be like, ooh, I don't really want to see that person at. Yeah, I'm going to see U2 at the Forum. I've seen U2 at some of the best venues.
Yeah.
The Forum, I'm not like, ooh, yeah, the Forum. I'm not that excited about seeing them at the Forum.
Yeah.
But seeing them at, like, say, the Greek would be amazing. Yeah. Or, you know, something like that. I understand what you mean. It's like everything is about the venue. So, anyways, so you played all these house concerts, and then you started building a fan base. You started getting a little bit of a buzz. Tell us.
Well, it wasn't really playing at house concerts at all. It was just playing in San Francisco's open mic scene, and then just that leading to other gigs. Not really house concerts per se, but other things. Yeah, other
that's awesome. You know what, dude? Like, there's so many songwriters that don't do that anymore. Like, whenever people are like, oh, "How do you get a gig in a different city?" I'm like, "How many open mics have you done?" None. I'm like, "There's your answer." You know, like that's it. It's what you should always do. I'm sure you don't do them anymore, Eddie.
No.
But, like, I like doing them. I think it's...
Well, comedy open mics are a little different than musical open
mics. Well, they're not that much different. Yeah, they're pretty brutal on both sides. But what it shows you, it's just, like, nobody gives a shit about what you're doing. Get up there and, like, still, like, power through it. It's easy to play for a show where everybody's like, I can't wait to see you. But when people just don't give a shit about
you... But, like
you,
I said, like, we've had this before. Like, you play a song, you can kind of lose yourself in your song.
Yeah, that's true.
Stand-up comedy, you need a reaction from people to judge the material.
Well, that's a more honest reaction than any, you know? It's brutal, though. I mean, it's...
It's not really an honest reaction, because you're... Sometimes low mics, you're in front of comedians who are...
Literally like, huh, that was funny.
They're there to do their own... To work on their own thing. They don't care what you're saying.
Right.
You know, there's hard... There might be two audience members there. If you get them to laugh, you'll... Like, okay, well, that worked. That was a good joke, but... For the most part, it's unproductive.
You need a hug. I'll give you a hug. Just kidding. So you start doing these open mics, and how long were you in San Francisco?
For almost 3 years.
Wow.
Yeah. Met some very interesting folks. Got a lot of opportunities, especially in tech gigs. I was able to... When Lyft first started, I started driving for them maybe 6 or 7 months in. And then they asked me to play at their Lyft one-year anniversary party. And that morning, I wrote a song... about Lyft, and afterwards they're like, hey, we want you to record it at a fancy, the Hyde Studios where Tupac recorded.
That's awesome.
And make a music video. I was like, well, I'll only do it if the founder, one of the founders, John, if he sings with me. And he's like, oh, I'll do it. So I have this song on Lyft's YouTube channel called The Lyft Song.
That's
so
awesome. Yeah. That's crazy. What a great idea. It's smart marketing.
Did you have to wear a pink mustache while you sang the song?
Oh, no, I had to grow one.
Oh. That's even more impressive. More impressive.
Eddie's is year-round.
More impressive.
Well, let's get to your music real quick. What are you going to play for us first?
This song is called Back. It's about being on tour, missing someone in a positive way.
All right. Yeah. Let's hear it.
Oh, I've lost track. But you don't have to hold your head, my dear, 'cause very soon I will be back.
Very nice. Very nice indeed.
It's a record scratch. What the hell are you doing?
I was lost in the song.
It's too late.
Our studio audience loved it. They're a little late. They're waiting. They're waiting
for his feet. You ruined the momentum.
I was going to dance at the end. You guys can't see it. So.
No, it was great. It was great.
Thank you.
Dude, I got to ask you about your guitar because it looks kind of like the Clapton guitar. What is that?
It is a Martin OM28V.
Oh.
A V for a V-neck. It's really uncomfortable to play, but my shtick is that it's a V-neck, and I pretty much just wear V-neck T-shirts.
Oh, you suffer for your art. You suffer for your... Exactly.
You're like, this is cool. Yeah. I'm going to make this my thing.
Yeah. And I really like skinny guitars, so that one made sense.
That almost looks exactly like the Clapton model.
So you play an uncomfortable guitar just because you wear V-necks?
I didn't know it was going to be uncomfortable. I couldn't tell the difference when I first got it. And then it's like, you can't return a guitar. Like, as soon as you take it out the store, it's a wrap.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Well, I've never heard anybody like kind of like, yeah, I don't like this guitar that much.
I hate this thing I play all the time.
When I play a different guitar and doesn't have the V-neck, I can play so much better. Like, yeah. It's easier.
No, you know, the V-neck's one of those things that's like, this is really awesome. I don't want this. It looks really cool. For me as a player, I don't love them as much as just like.
Now, what's a V-neck? I have no idea what
So show them the back of the guitar. So
it just like slopes like a V instead of like a C, like is a natural grip of your hand.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay.
So it sort of jabs into.
You can really see it, I think, at the end where the neck and the hold on, flip it over. You can really see it.
Oh, right there.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. It's just weird.
Yeah. Strange. Well, it's just like another different design of, you know, guitars. Some people like it because of the grip. I don't like it because I'm like, I am a round person. My hands are round. Everything's round. There's no edges. So it just doesn't feel like comfortable.
Yeah, if I could go back over again, I'd definitely go.
But I love the sound of that. What I'm saying is like not to like diss the guitar because like I feel like we're dissing the guitar. I actually love the sound of the guitar because it sounds like the Clapton guitar, which is one of my favorite guitars to play.
Thank you.
You know what I mean? So bitchin'. It's bitchin'. It is really cool. Cool. What was that song about? I have a quick question about your record, but tell me, like, what was the inspiration behind that song?
My inspiration was one of my biggest dreams is to be on a huge tour, and I've never been on one. And I was like, well, if I was on tour, I'd probably have someone back home that I missed. And this is all just speculation, what my mind would be thinking about. And that's just pretty much what it was. Instead of being a negative and missing someone, like you're crying, it's like, no, I'm positive.
I'm happy to be away from
right.
You.
No, it's not that I'm happy. But right. I'm happy because
this
I'm
is the best decision of my life.
It's funny because like you're writing about something like ahead of you, and for me, I actually wrote a song like that when I was living it. Like I wrote a song called "Home." Uh-huh. It was about I was doing a lot of touring, and I was just kind of like when I was at home, I didn't feel like I was at home because I felt like the road was my home. Right. And then when I was on the road, I was like. What the? I don't know where I fit. You know what I mean? So it's weird because like you're like writing a song about something that you're like, I think this was how I would feel, which is cool. You know,
I feel
like there's a connection, a parallel because I wrote a song like where I lived it and it was like, man, I thought touring was what I wanted, but it's not what I want all the time.
Yeah, touring is weird. Touring's
a
weird thing.
You gotta fake it till you make it.
Well,
it's a weird thing.
Touring is a weird thing. Like it is. Like how old are you?
28.
Okay, 28. All right. When you were 28, well, for me, it started when I was 22. It was like, that's when I started the band and everything.
Yeah. It's exciting when you're young and it's like, this is what I want to do. But then you get out there and you spend enough time out there, you're like
this is not exactly what I want
to
do.
No, it's kind of like, it's, I don't know. It kind of just pulls you thin. It just kind of makes you worn down.
You guys are ruining it for
no,
me.
No, no, no. It is.
No, it's great.
It's
a
fun.
Great thing for a while, but like, I'm just not someone who likes to travel a ton. Like, I'm not a big traveler, so I just like, I enjoy going out. But I love coming back home.
I love traveling so much, and I love playing so much, and I love traveling and playing so much. But when you do it so much, you start to like, you're like, what am I doing this for? Am I doing this for my home life? Or am I doing this to be out here?
I think it's different when you're doing music. You're kind of in like one place a night.
Yeah.
like comedy, you're kind of there for like 4 days, three, four, sometimes five, six days.
Sometimes that could work to your advantage. You can see more things.
You get really freaking bored.
See, for me, like, I feel like I never get to see much of the cities.
It's okay for 2 days, but like day four, day five, you're like, I'm in my hotel room. You're getting like, I can only masturbate so much.
So you did Sundance. Was this your first time doing Sundance?
My third or fourth.
Okay. All right. Yeah, yeah. So that's one of my favorite gigs. It's my it was my third year of doing Sundance too. And it's my favorite gig. It's like that and Summerfest, for me it doesn't beat it. Like South by Southwest is cool, but it's a little too much of a circus. But Sundance, it's like you're there, you're in the mountains, you can snowboard, you can go to restaurants, you can see movies. Did you see any movies when you were there?
No, I don't see movies.
No movies! Oh my god! You're missing out. That's half of the good stuff right
there. Is it? I'm not a guy who likes to sit down. I like to, you know, if I'm there, I want to get every opportunity I can. I don't think that's by sitting and watching the movie.
Dude, I met Stevie Nicks from watching the movie. God. Dave Grohl. Man, you'd be surprised how many good movies you're missing and good people you're missing, too. Anyways, so tell us how you made the transition to Los Angeles. Tell us about your experience at Sundance.
Man, my house in San Francisco that I was staying at, it was like sort of like a commune that got sold. And so I was like, well, this is an opportunity for me to try LA. And one of my roommates who's sort of a famous DJ, his name is DJ Earworm, he had moved ahead of time. Yeah, he moved ahead of time to LA, and he let me stay at his house from March till the beginning of May. And I'm just looking for a house, and I finally found one and moved in May 1st. And man, it feels good to finally settle in. Yeah, it's looking for a place in LA is just hard.
Yeah.
It's hard.
It is, and especially when you don't know like the different suburbs or the neighborhoods.
Yeah.
What the hip place is, what the not so hip place is.
It takes you like a couple years living here to like really realize the good parts of LA and the bad parts.
I'm from LA, and it was still like, where do I want to live? I mean, I went to school out here too, so I kind of had a little bit more of a bearing, but it just takes time. Like, you figure out what traffic you're willing to deal with, what traffic you're not willing to deal with. He lives in Hollywood, and you are in one of the most traffic-y parts of Hollywood.
Yeah, but like, I know how to get around it, so it's like I don't have to deal with it.
You don't have to deal with it. But, so where did you find your roots in Los Angeles?
I'm in Silver Lake.
Okay, yeah, so you're in the artist, you're in the, like, artist district.
Yeah, I'm away from everyone. I'm in the only gated community up in the hills, so like there's nothing there but like other like Asian families. So, all right, I don't know if that's
fit right in.
Yeah, I know, right? I don't know if that's good for me or not. I mean, it makes
it's
me
good for now. Yeah. It's good for now. Yeah, yeah, you'll so learn. You'll learn. Like, you know, living with people is fun. Living in different cities is fun. I've lived in a bunch of different apartments, and it's always like a gamble. I think the biggest gamble is when you have to find new roommates. Finding new roommates in Los Angeles. Woo!
Yeah.
You meet some characters, man. Oh man, I've met some characters. That's I should make a documentary just on that.
Dude, yeah.
Oh man. All right, I want to ask you about your record real quick. You have the song "Back" as number one, and "Intro" is number two.
Yeah.
Tell me what that's about. Because I was like, I've never seen that before.
I don't know the logic behind it. I don't.
You're like, I'm going to put the intro after a song.
The intro is an instrumental, and I didn't want to be like that guy who names their instrumentals. Like, Steve Ray Vaughan has a great story about Lenny, right? Yeah. I don't have a story about the instrumental I wrote. And it just fit with a lot of my songs are in G. The intro is in G. I was like, this just makes sense. And I also heard to give your CD to your music supervisor, your best song has to be the first song.
Right.
So I was like, well, then I can't put my intro as the first song. So, yeah. Hopefully that makes sense.
If it makes sense to you.
If it makes sense to you.
That's all that matters.
You know what?
That's
like,
all that matters.
I never played that game. Like I had my radio programmer that was like, dude, you got to put your singles number one. I'm like, no. I'm like, no. I'm not gonna change my record for a radio programmer who is probably going to play our song maybe for 3 months and then look at something else. But, dude, I commend you for doing that because a lot of music supervisors do ask for that. And it's like you're bettering your chances by doing that. But I was always like, no, I don't want to do that. I'm not going to do that. If you tell me to do that, I'm not going to do it.
Stubbornness.
I'm stubborn. I'm like a bulldog, which is why I have a bulldog. All right, let's get to a track on your record. What are you gonna play for us?
Oh, we're playing Hesitation. This is about me not being able to speak to girls.
Ah.
So it's about hesitation.
Yeah.
Real quick, before we start playing it, what was it like making the record?
Man, I was not prepared at all. I had like maybe 6 songs ready to go, and on my Kickstarter I said like I was going to do 9 or 10, And just to get prepped and do all this tracking, I had only done the guitar part, and I wanted to be full, like drums and bass and everything. And I was like, whoa, I was just scrambling.
Right.
So this last second, I just had to go for these guys who I had met earlier before, who played for Clara C and David Choi, these famous YouTubers who I met. They're just like, they killed it for me. It's like a day. And everything, I was like, wow, I was so lucky.
It raises your game when you're around good musicians.
Oh, gosh, doesn't it? It's contagious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The best advice somebody ever gave me before I started my band, they're like, always be the worst one in your band. And I'm like, I love that.
That's great.
And so I always made that a point, and I still am, and it's made me so much better of a musician. I think you should do the same. Anyways, let's play your song, Hesitation. Here it comes.
What does this hesitation mean? If I try hard, I'll make a scene. But when the price is worth the risk, I take a chance and go for it. What are her eyes telling me? If I look harder, I might blink. But when her lips are worth my weight, I can't, I won't hesitate. She's so beautifully dressed, her stomach's in a mess. Can I pull this off? Pull off these butterflies. She's so beautifully dressed, her stomach's in a mess. Can I pull this off? Pull off these butterflies. What does this conversation mean? If I keep quiet, she might think I'm just here to waste your time. But I'm just lost in her eyes. What does this conversation mean? If I keep quiet, she might think that I'm just here to waste your time. But I'm just lost in her eyes. Lost in her eyes. She's so beautifully dressed, her stomach's in a mess. Can I pull this off? Pull off these butterflies. She's so beautifully dressed, her stomach's in a mess. Can I pull this off? Pull off these butterflies. My hands in my pockets, my eyes on the table. She wants me, she wants me. I know I am capable. I switch the dress down, shoes down the floor. Pull off these butterflies. She's so beautifully dressed, her stomach's in a mess. Can I pull this off? Pull off these butterflies. What does this conversation mean? If I keep quiet, she might think that I'm just here to waste her time. But I'm just lost in her.
Later in the applause.
Yeah. No, I'll come on. The fade.
You got one. You can applaud into the fade.
No. Our studio audience is very polite. They know. They know.
You totally applaud into the fade.
They were like, wait. They were all talking to each other. Like, wait till the song's totally done. Yeah. Peter Chung. So, you just did a big show at the Mint, I saw on Facebook.
The Mint?
Didn't you just
what
play
is that?
No, Molly Malone's.
Molly Malone's.
Sorry.
Yeah. It was my first.
It was so big.
It was with an M.
He blacked it out.
He's like, the Mint. What is that?
Well,
it wasn't
wait.
Big. It wasn't big. It was my first legit show ever in L.A.
Jay Tinsky, did he book you? Jay Tinsky?
No.
Okay.
No.
He He used to be the booker there. I think he still books some of the shows.
Well, hook me up, man. Just let me know.
Yeah, he's the man.
How'd it go? Did you get a lot of people out?
No.
Good.
No, it's really tough bringing people out to LA. It's really
tough. Impossible.
Dude, it is. Well, it's not impossible.
It's not impossible, but it's like a lot of work.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work.
I thought I put the effort in, but I guess I didn't.
It's tough.
No, it's brutal.
It's one of those things where LA doesn't, they don't care. Like, they just don't
care. Well, on any given night, you can go to 100 shows.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but I'll tell you this. I'll tell you this, and this is what I love about Los Angeles. When they do come out and they do care, they will stick by you through it all. I have fans that have still bought. They've bought 7 records. They're 14 years in with kids. They're having me play their weddings. They're having me play like all kinds of stuff. Like, dude, you can't. I mean, that's just unbelievable. That kind of support. I don't think I would get that in any other city like New York.
Well, I think people feel connected to the artist here because you meet them on a personal level.
Yeah.
So I think there's
connection. You have to build it with them. Like, it's like, you have to incorporate.
Well, because they kind of see you from the beginning, so they see you as a normal, regular person who's just trying to do this. So they feel like, they're not starstruck or at all of you. They're kind of like, I like your music, I dig you as another human being.
Right.
And we're friends, that type of thing. Whereas, like, when you see someone, if you're traveling, people think, oh my God, he's a rich, famous person.
Right.
And so they hold you on a different level. In LA, it's like, we're all the same.
Well, one thing I have to say about, like, fans for NK Band, like, over the years, they've done a lot to help me get into the next thing. Like, you know, one of the fans that saw us open for Dave Matthews Band was like, dude, you got to play Utah. And I'm like, I want to play Sundance. And he was like, hold on. And a week later, he was like, hey, I got the guy that's going to help you get into Sundance. And boom, done. And it's like, there's so many things like that happened that, you know, that happened. He was in San Diego. You know what I mean? So another fan of mine has had me play every corporate, almost every year, he has me play his corporate party at his big company. And, you know, he's been doing that for years and years and years. So it's like, you never know the kind of people that are going to latch onto your stuff. Mm-hmm. But the hardest thing is getting them in the door because they don't care. They're just
there's so many options.
Oh, you got a show? Cool. Yeah.
There's so much noise.
You got to get excited about
There's so much noise.
Do you have any advice in regards to getting him in there? Any
I'll give you the best advice. Both of you. Eddie, too.
Play nude.
No. You have to hustle. Like, if you think you need to be promoting, like, 2 or 3 weeks out, promote, like, 6 to 8 weeks out.
Holy shit.
I mean, dude, it's possible. I've gotten 1,100 people to come to the House of Blues on Monday night. I mean, that's not easy. 1,100 people. That's over capacity.
That's disgusting.
Yeah. So it works, but dude, you have to hustle. Eddie, you know those shows have always been like had hundreds of people.
Yeah.
But dude, it all falls on me. And that's the thing. I'm up like, it's like sleepless nights. I'm like sending out emails, text messages. I'm calling people. I'm doing radio stuff. Like, you know, like if I'm doing, now it's like if I do any kind of big show, it's coupled with a TV show, a radio show, whatever it is. You know what I mean? So as much promo as you can do, things like this, dude, that's where it's at. And you have to work harder than you think it is. Like, oh yeah, I'll get 50 people there. To get 50 people there, you need to send out 400 invites to people. Not like a Facebook invite, like a text message to 400
people. Like a wedding invitation.
Yeah.
Wax stamp
dude,
on the envelope.
It's crazy. And you know what? It does work. So when I see 1,100 people or like 600 people on a Monday night or 800 people, whatever it is, and I'm like, man, it's the fruit of the labor. You know what I mean?
Sure.
But it's like, I know how many people I sent out invitations to. And like the cool thing is like when people miss it, they're like, dude, I can't believe I missed it. And I'm like, dude, you'll make it to the next one, hopefully. And then they make sure they make it to the next one. They bring like 4 or 5 people. Wow. And then plus the people that, you know, came to the first one, bring more people. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, honestly, that's how it works. Like for me, it only took me 10 shows to get to the House of Blues. Because I sold out the first show, I sold out the second show, I sold out the third show, fourth show, fifth show, we did not sell it out, sixth show, we didn't sell it out, seventh show, we sold out, eighth show, we sold out, and then by the ninth show, I remember our ninth show was like, we had the worst numbers, and then the 10th show, House of Blues was like, we've just got word you've been selling out every club in Hollywood, we want you to do a co-headlining show, and I co-headlined with a band, and they brought 100 people. We brought 750 people.
Dang.
So the House of Blues was like, you were never going to share the bill with anybody ever again. And we did 24 shows, you know, since.
Holy
so smokes. Honestly, it's a lot of work. And it makes me not want to do those shows as much because it's so much work. Whereas Sundance, I just show up and it's like, oh, there's 400 people here. This is awesome. This is great. So Summerfest is the same way. It's like, oh, we just play in front of 10,000 people. Yeah. That's amazing. But they're not all like that. So you want to get that that buzz in LA, you got to hustle. You got to hustle, man.
Ooh, I didn't think about it like that.
Okay. Well, dude, you'll do it. You're good enough to do it, man. This is what this show's about, like showcasing talent like you. You got talent. You got the songs. Play us another tune. What are you going to play us?
This song is called If You, not F You, but F You.
F.
I like this.
Yeah. So it's about taking chances.
All right, let's hear it.
If you take some of your time and you mix it in with mine, our chemicals create a potion that works quick. Even though our hearts and hands work opposite, even though our hearts and hands work opposite, if you take some of your plans and make them our plans, we'll crash, collide, create constellations in the sky. To Mars and Venus, no divide. Yeah. And if you take some of your smiles and press them onto mine, our lips will close, connect, and your skin will blend with mine. We'll have forever, but I'll take your love seconds at a time. Don't you close your eyes, I'm afraid I love my fade away. Blue to green to gray. Don't you close your eyes, I'm afraid I love my fade away. Love, don't fade away. Don't fade away.
The audience is right on that one.
And he ended it with a fadeaway.
I know. And the audience waited. Mm. They were like, on bated breath.
I think he could have brought it in as he was fading away.
They were like, let's do this. Real quick, before we sign out, where can everybody find you? Where are you playing next? What's going on with you?
Every Monday I play at Elderberry's from Where's 12 that? To 2. It's on Sunset. Sunset and Gardner, I believe.
Yeah, right. I live right there. Cerro Bonita. Yeah. Gardner, between Cerro Bonita and Gardner.
And then I got this big show coming up. It's called Collaboration. Collaboration LA. It is in June 27th. And just check my website.
Where is that? Music.
It is in some LA theater.
Great plug. You've been working on that?
Catch him at an LA theater.
Los Angeles Theater Center.
Los Angeles Theater Center. I've never heard of Los Angeles Theater Center.
Where is it? It's in the theater center.
Again,
it's a talent competition. So
okay,
yeah,
right on. Yeah. What about your websites and your Instagram and all that stuff?
Everything is Peter Chung Music. So
spell it out. There's some dumb people out there.
Yeah, did you hear that? He called you guys dumb.
I'm just kidding.
Gil called you guys dumb.
As in cat, H as in hat, U as in umbrella, N as in Nancy, G as in Greg. Peter Chung Music. So everything's at Peter Chung Music, whatever.
.com, .net, .org.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, which one is it?
All of those?
Oh, dot com.
Okay.
All of them. All of them. I own
Global Domination.
The redirect. The redirect.
I own the internet. Yeah.
Well, Peter, thank you so much for being a guest, man.
Thank you for having me.
Dude, really of course. We're going to have you back. You sounded great, man. And you know what? We know that people are going to hear your music and love it. So.
You got to win that talent show.
Oh.
Yeah. You're going to win it. You're going to Global Domination.
At the Center Talent Theater.
At the Los Angeles Theater Center.
Somewhere. At some point.
Cheers.
All right. Well, we'll see you next week, Eddie.
Take it easy.
I miss you already.
See ya.